The first train I could catch from the station rocketed across the landscape on its cushion of antigrav, part of a rail network so old the banks on either side of the tracks have risen to overshadow the sleek trains in some places. It was a quick way for me to get out of Toscano and to a major hegemony city, in this case, the great hub of Frangilian. Once in a big city, I was confident I could hide. In Frangilian, I could catch transport for anywhere and start plugging into the bounty hunter network. If I could find a few magi, I might have a fighting chance of staying alive for a little while. I also had a fighting chance of staying out of sight for a few days. If I could find a magi, circle or solitary, I could persuade to part with a few trade secrets. My chances would get even better. Screw decoding old shadow journals. I wanted to find out what I was, and if I would turn back into a human once Jaff was a full demon instead of an Anki-Mel. I was getting to the point of not being too choosy about how I extracted that information either. I settled myself deeper into my seat, wishing I could find a way to make the carriage a little darker. I wasn't exactly inconspicuous, with the tat on my cheek, the emerald glittering there too, my sword and guns, and the flawless, lovely architecture of my face. I had grown a little more used to seeing a Holovid model's face in the mirror, but it was still a horrendous jolt if I wasn't ready for it. It wasn't so much the overlay of demon beauty that bothered me. It was that every time I caught sight of my face in the mirror, I had a weird double image. My old human face, tired and familiar, but changed, turned into loveliness even I had trouble looking at. I hated even catching glimpses of myself in windows, like I was doing now. I focused out the window, seeing nothing but strips of oranflu lighting and the meaningless smear that was the ghost of my face. Orange stripes blurred together, telling me the hover train was gliding along with no trouble at all in the reactive greased furrow we still called tracks, even though no train had run on tracks since about 20 years after the discovery of reactive and antigrav. Nobody else was in the compartment. I'd been alone since I boarded the train. Not many tourists took the red-eye from Turin Station to Frangilian. My eyes dropped to the silver cuff on my left wrist. It sank into my skin, and the gap between the curved ends seemed smaller. I couldn't believe I'd even fit my wrist through there. When I'd been human, my wrists had been big, corded with muscle from years of daily sword drill. Now they were thinner, looking frail even though they held a great deal of strength in their flawlessly powerful demon bones and claw structure. The cuff felt good, though my left hand was frozen around my scabbard. I reached over with my right hand, touched the fluid etched lines. It was beautiful.
Is it from Jaframel? Or is it something I shouldn't have picked up? One of Lucifer's little jokes? Could be a tracking device.
But it felt so impossibly right, snugged against my wrist as if made for me. I couldn't quite bring myself to take it off, despite the uneasy idea that perhaps the bracelet was growing closed around my wrist. I sat there mulling over the situation and not coming up with anything fresh for a good 2 hours. I was beginning to feel a little strange, lightheaded, as if I was going into shock. The world was going gray. The blue pleather seat across from me losing its shine, a sort of fuzz creeping over my vision. I closed my eyes, but that made it worse. The train rocketed out from under a mountain tunnel, and the mark on my shoulder began to tingle. I reached up with my right hand, touched the mark through my shirt, rubbed at it. If I touched it with my bare fingers, I would see out Jaframel's eyes. It was very, very tempting.
But if I look out his eyes and into hell, will I come away from the experience sane?
The thought that the scar might burn off my skin if he became a demon again was unpleasant, to say the least. I racked my brain for demon sigils and magical theory, but couldn't come up with anything that applied even vaguely. I didn't have a clue what would happen, and that was uncomfortable, to say the least. I blindly trusted him the same way I'd blindly trusted Jace.
But Jace was human, and Jace ended up giving his life for me. Jaframel gave up his power as a demon, shackling himself to me, and there was a time when I could have sworn he didn't care. Maybe going back into hell without me last night made him care again.
The more I thought about it, the more I wondered.
How quaint. I'm pretty much a dismal failure at relationships with two species now.
No. He said he'd come back, he promised. I'm just gonna have to wait and see.
Wonderful. My favorite kind of magical riddle. One where you just sit and wait for the unpleasantness to begin.
I rubbed at my shoulder through my shirt. Rubbed it and rubbed it. The buzzing, prickling tingle in the mark intensified. Then it gave one incredible crunching flare of pain that ate right through the gray blanket of shock. I sat bolt upright, 4 inches of steel leaping free of the sheath, disappearing as I shoved the sword back home. There was no enemy to kill here. Just one flare after another of deep, grinding pain in my shoulder. What if the mark vanishes? What will I do then?
Come on, Danny, focus on your breathing. Deep and serene.
The trouble was, I felt less than serene. My entire body ached for Jaframil. I knew I wouldn't be able to sleep. In fact, I'd probably go insane from lack of rest. I'd survived almost a year without him before. But the bond between us was too established by now. My research, fragmented as it was, told me one thing for sure. I certainly couldn't break it.
But with a demon's power, he might be able to.
Will you stop it, Danny? He'll come back for you. It's just when we have to worry about.
The pain in my shoulder eased little by little. I tucked my chin, reached up, and pulled my shirt away from my chest. Ropey lines of scarring twisted in the golden-skinned hollow of my shoulder, looking decorative rather than scar-like. They also flushed a deep, angry red. An amazing, searing bolt of power hit the mark, spreading down my skin like oil. My hips jerked forward as my head snapped aside, suddenly glad there was nobody in the compartment with me. It felt like I'd just slammed a hypo of caffeine-laden aphrodisiac, pleasure spilling and swirling through my veins, tautening my body like a harp string. The cuff on my wrist reacted, etched lines suddenly swirling with green light. I tipped my left hand over and stared at the design, fascinated, as the lines moved on the metal, shaping themselves into patterns I could almost recognize. They looked like demon glyphs, mutating and twisting, as beautiful as they were alien, and as beautiful as their language was hurtful. I probed at it delicately with my non-physical senses, felt nothing.
Is it just a decoration? Pretty, but useless? If it keeps glowing, I'm gonna have problems. It'll be hard to hide.
I tipped into a half-trance, looking at the colored lines sway and slide over the metal's surface, still probing at it. For all magical intents and purposes, it was invisible. That in itself was strange, as most things have a psychic echo of one kind or another. The power continued pulsing down my skin, each successive wave deeper and warmer.
This is nice. But why? Is Jaframil reaching for his mark on my skin, trying to locate me? Does this mean he's out of hell and feeling frisky? I hope like hell he is. But staying one step ahead of demon assassins might also make it hard for him to find me.
I stared at the cuff's little light show. I blinked. When I looked again, the lines were frozen into a single symbol.
Hedjithuz. One of the 9 canons.
Shaped like a backward-leaning angular H with a slash through it. A simple, stark rune of a simple, stark nature. The rune of danger. There was only one door. I rocked up onto my feet, reached it in 2 steps and slid it aside, pressing the lock lever. Any transport employee would have the key code for the outside lock, so it would be easy to pick out of an unprotected brain. Just one more reason why people feared scions. If you didn't mind getting a wash of uncoordinated, jumbled filth with any usable information, a scion could probably do all the things normals were so afraid of. The thought of the effort it would take to clean out my mind after pickpocketing something from a normal's head made my skin crawl.
Yuck. The corridor between the windows on the other side of the train and the blank plasteel walls broken by doors into individual compartments was barely wide enough for an anorexic technogroupie to get through. I turned my back to the windows. I was fairly sure any incoming fire wouldn't be coming from there. We were going too fast, and stuffed my sword in the loop on my rig. The corridor was too narrow for swordplay, and if I had to do knife work, I didn't want to do it here. So it was guns. I slid the two projectile guns out of their holsters. A plasbolt might interact with any reactive paint on the outside of the hover train, and I had no desire to see another reaction fire up close. I was glad the train was all but empty. Collateral damage was not something I wanted happening if I could help it. I edged down the train toward the back, one gun on either side, my arms stretched out.
If any normals come out, I'm gonna look pretty silly. And if anything else shows up, I'll shoot it. Please don't let anyone out. Let them all stay in their compartments. If I have to shoot, please don't let me hit anyone innocent. Anubis, witness my plea. Please don't let me hit anyone.
The mark on my shoulder pulsed again, another soft wave of power sliding down my skin, burrowing in toward my bones.
Why? What is happening?
I couldn't afford to holster a gun and reach up to touch the mark.
If Jaff can track me through the scar, can another demon do so too?
I covered both ends of the train, looking back and forth.
Too bad I don't have eye stalks like the Sherry family bodyguards are all augmented with. It'd be good being able to see both ways at once.
I felt it then. A quick fluttering brush against my shields, retreating almost as soon as it occurred. Training took over, clamped down on my hind brain as adrenaline flooded my system.
Too much adrenal juice and I'll be a jittery mess.
Other trained mental reflexes locked down the direction, complex metaphysical calculations and intuition all slicing in an arc that pinpointed the location.
That smell again. Ice-cold moonlight? Wet rat fur? The thing that threw my tracker and disappeared? Or something that smells like it? Is on the train. Probably just appearing out of thin air the way demons have a nasty habit of doing, according to the demonology texts. Especially the lesser and low flights. The greater flight like more dramatic entrances.
At least some of my grueling, piecemeal demonology research was now useful. I knew that some demons could send the lesser or low flight of hell to do their bidding in the human world. If the demon had enough power, or if the demon was given permission by Lucifer. Lucifer's permission was invoked before every conjuration of Magi, solitary or circle, attempted to bring a demon through, and I got the idea from Jaff Ramel that there was a bureaucracy in place to handle the requests. Since Magi were traditionally so jealous of the methods they found to weaken the walls between the world and hell to get their messages through, it sometimes took years for the proper method to be found to reach a demon one could control or make a familiar. No Magi ever attempted to contact more than the very lowest echelons of the lesser flight. If a greater flight demon showed up in a Magi's conjuring circle, the practitioner was either especially lucky or incredibly painfully doomed.
Most likely the latter.
Demons weren't under that type of restriction. It was thought fairly easy for a greater flight demon to bring a lesser flight demon through, and even easier for them to bring one of the low flight.
Which all adds up to bad news for Danny Valentine.
I turned my back to the rear of the hover train, backed up one slow step at a time. The guns held steady, pointed down the front of the corridor, power beginning to glow in my hands.
The bullets alone might not do much against whatever this thing is, but hot lead wedded to fiery power makes a lethal combination.
It wasn't as elegant as blessed steel, and it was so messy and draining, not many scions could do it. But I was no longer human. For however much longer I wore Jaframel's mark.
As long as I have the capability, I might as well use it.
Hover trains are long, flexible snakes, each plasteel carriage connected to the next by plas-reactive cloth. This means that pleats of the material separate the compartments, flexing as the hover train curves its way through a shallow, reactive-laden groove that provides the necessary relief from friction and gravity. This also meant I was staring down a long corridor lit only with oranflu light and fluorescent tubes in thickly grilled floor divots, watching the tunnels stretch and twist like the digestive tract of some huge creature, when a small, pulsing movement alerted me. It melted out of the shadows, crawling forward on hands and feet. And when I say hands and feet, I mean that its palms rested flat against the floor, fingers spread, claws extended. Its feet were flat on the floor too, which made its femurs rotate oddly in their sockets. Human ballet dancers would have sold their souls to have that kind of turnout. It was vaguely human-shaped, white-skinned like the underbelly of a blind fish, with black diamond teardrops painted over its eyes, making them into oubliettes. Its ears came up to high, sharp points on either side of its oily, bald head, and my skin went cold. The face was different, thank the gods. It wasn't Santino's face. This was a ruined, chubby doll face, twisted up like a demented child's, with soft cheeks and pudgy lips. It wore the remains of a red robe, tied at the waist with a bit of what looked like hemp cord, but the robe was kilted up by its posture, and I saw its genitals flapping loose.
Well, now I know where the expression three bald imp comes from.
The lunatic desire to laugh rose in my chest, as it always did.
Why do I always feel the urge to laugh at times like this?
If I hadn't been studying what I could of magi-coded demonology all these years, the resemblance to Santino might have made me start to scream. Instead, I held my ground, pointing the guns at it, thanking the gods again that the compartments around me were empty. I didn't want anyone caught in this crossfire. It was a demon, all right. A scavenger. One of the low flight, I was betting, since it looked like something I could possibly kill if I had a lot of luck. It stood to reason that if some of the larger demons had escaped, one or more of them might have brought a few friends.
No other demons on this train, though. I'd bet my life on it. I am betting my life on it.
It was a demon, and I was only a Hedera.
But I am Hedera to the devil's assassin himself, at least until the mark fades. If it fades. I hope that's enough to buy me my miserable life. I maybe overmatch the imp in power, but it might have more speed. Especially since it was born in a demon's body and I still don't have complete control over my inhuman fast reflexes. The close quarters favor it, it's smaller. I prefer edged metal when dealing with this thing, but beggars can't be choosers.
All this flitted through my mind in less time than it takes an unregistered hooker to vanish from a patrol. Then it coiled on itself, its terrible child's face twisting and slavering, and threw itself down the hall at me. Yeah! I squeezed both triggers, the recoil jolting all the way up to my shoulders as power tore out from me too, matching the physical velocity of the bullets. I had no time to care about stray fire catching anyone else now that the fun had started. Again, 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 tracking the thing. It was unholy quick, throwing myself backward.
I've gotta get enough speed, gotta get enough speed.
Yeah! The Kia burst from me as my back hit the rear of the hover train. Physics, insulted, took her due revenge. I tumbled out of the speeding hover train with the imp's left hand claws sinking into my chest. Falling, fire in my chest. Right hand gun slammed back in the holster, hand blurring. I meant to reach for my sword, but the thing snarled and twisted on itself, bleeding momentum, and we crashed into the side of the hover train trough, all the breath driven out of my lungs. The tall banks on either side of the train trough were hard clay dirt instead of stone, thank the gods. I slid downward. Cool night air touched my face, steam rising from my skin. Reflex forced me clumsily up to my feet, almost overbalancing, hilt of my sword sucking into my palm, blade singing free of the sheath.
Damn, I almost understand the words.
It was definitely one of the low flight, incapable of anything other than demon speech. If it was trapped inside a magi's conjuring circle, I might have been able to force it to my will. But it was loose in the world, obviously told to come and make life difficult for me. Had I been a magi, I probably would have known something to do to trap it so I could question it. But I was a necromance. Demons weren't my trade. For all that, I'd been screwing one for a long time now and trying to decode documents about others. Blood trickled down my chest, hot and black and thick. Too much blood.
Why isn't it healing the wounds?
The imp clung to the clay wall. I held my sword in second guard, scabbard reversed in my left hand.
Could I holster my left-hand gun? I must have. Either that or dropped it, doesn't matter. I'm standing in a hover train trough with an imp yowling at me.
My life certainly gets interesting sometimes. I took a deep breath, flavored with night air and the dry chemical reek of reactive. Pain flaring through me as the thing's claw swipes burned deeper, whittling like hot blades.
Does it have poisoned claws? That would just cap the whole goddamn night off, wouldn't it?
Come on. My sword dipped slightly as it shifted position. Here on open ground with my sword, I felt a little more sanguine.
A little? Shit, no, a lot. There's just something about a bright length of steel that makes a girl feel capable of kicking ass.
Come get me if you want me. Its baby's face distorted and reddened, but it didn't leap.
Great. I can stay here until another hover train comes along and pastes me, or I can try to climb up a 15-foot clay wall while trying to fend off this thing. What a marvelous choice.
Well, no time like the present.
Come on!
I stamped my foot.
Come and get me!
It leapt, a marvel of uncoordinated fluidity, and muscle memory took over. I heard Jado's voice.
No think! Move!
The sword carved the thing's head from its shoulders. Half turn, the hilt of the blade floating up to protect me, the tip whipping faster than the eye could follow, a solid arc twisting like a Mobius strip. The imp's stomach cavity opened, fluid gushing out. Another strike, lightning quick as the last, and the thing's right arm fell too. I shuffled, ready to strike again if the shattered, sliced body would twitch. My feet slipped in the thick, bouncy greasiness of reactive paint, a layer of rubbery stuff at least 6 inches deep giving resiliently under me. The thing collapsed, twitching. Smoke rose up from its corpse. I watched as its skin and tissues interacted with the reactive, not looking away. Partly because if I looked away, I wasn't sure I would see if it twitched again. And partly because of Jado.
Watch the death of your enemy if you can. For you have caused it. When you have killed, watch the consequences of your actions.
It was a good thing I'd killed it, too. I didn't think I could take another pass or two of combat. I was savagely tired, the mark on my shoulder pulsing, another soft, warm wave of power sliding down from it.
This is beginning to get downright distracting. Is he looking for me? How long does it take to turn an Anaki Mel back into a demon back in hell? What would happen to me if he found me, assuming he was even back in my world again? Could the genetic reshaping he'd done to me be undone?
Last time, it had taken a mixture of genetic shaping and tantric magic, a remaking from the center of my bones outward. I still wasn't sure of the extent of what it had done to my psyche, but as long as I was still a necromance, it didn't matter.
Maybe. But still, I wonder just how human I am anymore.
I waited until the imp was just a bubbling streak on the reactive before the point of my sword dropped slightly.
I didn't know reactive would do that. I wonder what it would do for other demons.
It was cheap and easy to obtain, and maybe I could think of something to do with it that would make my life easier.
Like maybe plasgunning hell.
Pain from the claw marks in my chest suddenly slamming back into my awareness as the one-pointed concentration of combat eased. I sheathed my sword.
Hopefully the hover train will make it to the next stop. Hopefully no one will do anything stupid like fall out the hole in the back.
Hopefully nobody will even notice a huge gaping hole in the back of the train.
Yeah, right.
The sides of the trough began to vibrate. Another train was on the way. I took a few running steps and leapt, my claws digging into clay. My chest tore open. Forced myself up the bank, boots scrabbling, claws frantically grabbing at the hard-packed material. Something else ripped free in my chest.
Why are the wounds healing?
Another hot flush of power from the mark on my shoulder gave me strength to haul myself up over the edge of the wall. I collapsed along the top, closing my eyes and blessing the gods.
Thank you. Will that train have another imp on it?
I rolled away from the hover train track and half fell down a gently sloping embankment, landing in something cold and wet.
Shit.
My arms and legs were weighted with lead. The mark pulsed again, This time, all the way down my left arm and out my fingertips.
Oh.
I vomited an incredible mass of ice-hot, writhing poison. It jetted out of my nose and mouth.
Nice, Danny. Maybe it'll shoot out your ears, too.
It seemed to take forever. But when it was done, I immediately felt much better. Scrabbled myself over onto my other side, hooked my claws in the solidity under the wet, slimy stuff I'd landed in, and began to struggle away from whatever I'd thrown up. My chest no longer burned. I reached the top of another shallow slope, and the scent of pines closed around me. I rolled and ended up against something soft. Tree branches drooping down to the ground. They made a lovely little tent. I wriggled my way underneath, getting a confused impression of mountains and trees. It was as far away from the track and possibly being seen as I could get. I wanted to hide further away, but I couldn't manage the energy to move. I curled up into a ball and fell into a deathly doze. 4 days later, I made it into Freetown, New Prague. I wouldn't have chosen a Freetown. I was a hegemony citizen, and even the Puchkin Alliance was safer than a Freetown. I would have been able to plug into the bounty net in a Puchkin or a hegemony town. In a Freetown, I'd have to depend on luck and wits, both severely strained by recent events. I'd come a lot further on the hover train than I'd thought, and striking out across open country seemed more dangerous than just following the hover train trough and finding a station where I could get a transport or buy a slickboard. I'd found a station, all right. The only trouble was, I'd somehow gotten on a non-stop train that ended up in New Prague. I came into the city, tired and grainy-eyed, the mark pulsing softly on my shoulder, and found a room in the red light district. I don't speak Czechy, but American is the trade lingua in most free towns. So after a bit of pigeon-laced negotiation and the exchange of a handful of new credit notes, I found myself in possession of a few square feet among the bordellos and hash dens for a few days. Strictly speaking, the bordellos and hash dens were my type of places. I'd hunted many a bounty down in whorehouses and bars. More importantly, the psychic turmoil of sex, synth hash, and since it was a free town, real hash, Chlormin 13 and other drugs, desperation and violence would keep some of what I was hidden. The longer I could stay alive, the more I could find out about the demons Lucifer wanted tracked down. Since I was already being attacked, hunting down four demons was where I was going to start. Better to face death on my feet doing what I could. I warded the room well. It was small. A pink-flowered rug on the floor, a retrofitted plas-powered radiator giving out heat I didn't need, a bed, a dresser, and a bathroom. It was a far cry from a villa in the Toscano Hills. I filled the bathtub and scrubbed the dirt off my skin. Then I soaked in the warm water and then spent some power on cleaning off my clothes. I had landed in slag after killing the imp, and if I was still human, my skin might be burning with slag fever by now, as my body struggled to cope with the aftermath of a cocktail of chemical sludge. It took a long time to get my clothes free of the stink. I had one other thing to do. The only thing I had was a knife, and it took a long time of hacking at my hair before I managed to get most of it off. The resultant shaggy mass around my face was short enough that nobody should recognize me right away, unless they knew my tat. Only other scions were likely to be capable of distinguishing the fine differences between one scion's accreditation tat and the next, so it would make me a little less likely to be caught. It was the best I could do under the circumstances. I slipped out through the third-story window and down the rickety iron fire escape, leaving the door locked. I had another day paid for, and I didn't leave anything behind. I found a mound of garbage and threw down the heavy mass of curling black hair, then used a very small bit of power to spark the strands. They smoked and smelled awful, but they burned. I'd survived for 5 days so far. Not bad when you're matched against demons. I stepped out into the wilds of Freetown, New Prague on a chilly afternoon just as the sky was beginning to cloud over. I decided to look around the bars a bit and see if I could get lucky. I might be able to find a mercenary or bounty hunter I knew, either personally or by reputation. New Prague was that kind of town. I could hire someone to help me hide, or maybe find a magi I could persuade to give me a crash course in what to do when demons were looking to kill you. 6 bars later, I stepped into a dingy pivnica, a watering hole tucked under a bridge. The silence that fell in the pivnica was enough to make me think I'd done the wrong thing. It was a low, smoky room, 3 steps down from the sidewalk outside. A first floor that might have been at street level 100 years ago, but was now halfway to being a basement. I scanned the place once. Normals, no shielding on the walls, and an atmosphere suddenly charged with fear and loathing. A deadhead bar. This was a rough place. For once, I didn't look out of the ordinary with my weapons. Freetowns don't have the type of legislation covering who could carry what the hegemony or putsch can have. It's largely up to the ruling cartel of each town to make the rules and enforce them. So I saw projectile guns and short swords, a few machetes, assorted other odds and ends. No plas guns.
That's a mark in my favor. I have a bounty hunter's license, and here in the Freetown I can carry whatever I want if I keep my nose clean and don't interfere with mob family wars or cartel turf disputes.
Then a familiar pair of almost yellow eyes met mine.
Well, isn't this par for the course? Of all the people I expect to see here, he is the last. But this is better than I hoped for. If I can convince him not to try to kill me.
I paced away from the door, through the haze of synthash smoke and the effluvia of unwashed human. Lucas Villalobos sat in a heavily shadowed back booth, a bottle on the table in front of him. I picked my way between tables, giving the bartender in his stained apron one glance when he opened his mouth. My tat shifted on my cheek, burning. My emerald spat a single green spark. I saw a few normals around me flinch. The bartender, a stolid, heavy Freetowner with a long, drooping black mustache, closed his mouth and wiped his hands on his apron. Lucas had his back to the wall. There was nothing I could do. I slid into the other side of the booth, my back prickling at the thought of the door behind me. It was an implicit gesture of trust. Lucas wouldn't get many clients if he let them get shot in the bars he frequented. He was known for taking difficult, complex jobs, most generally involving assassination. If you had enough cash to hire him, he would kill whoever you asked. He only had one rule: no kids. He wouldn't kill anyone under 18. At least, not unless they got in the way during a job. I'd heard unavoidable casualties didn't bother him too much. His eyes met mine. A river of scarring ran down the left side of his narrow face. Word was, now, this is only rumor, I don't know for sure, that he'd once been a necromance and committed some act so awful, death had denied him. I could have pitied him if he wasn't so dangerous. He examined me, blinking slowly like a lizard. His almost yellow eyes brightened a little, and his lipless mouth curled up slightly.
Well, you come up in the world, chica.
I felt a prickle between my shoulder blades. I did not look back over my shoulder, did not dare even shift my weight.
I wasn't sure you'd recognize me.
I know that anywhere. You still move the same, too.
His hair lay lank against his skull. He smelled, as usual, of a dry stasis cabinet, and I realized it wasn't a human smell. Whatever he'd once been, he wasn't strictly human now.
You owe me.
I'd bargained with him in Nuevo Rio while hunting Santino.
You turned down payment that time.
I shivered at the thought of paying him what he usually asked of a scion. There was a reason most of his clients were corporations and mob families. I heard he even did secret work for the hegemony sometimes.
You thought I was dead.
His face didn't alter in the least. His expression was blank, uninterested boredom.
Ain't you? I don't see much of what you once was in your face, Valentine.
Every day is a death. I've got a question and an offer for you, Lucas. He looked at me for a long time. I held his eyes, hoping he wouldn't see how desperate I was. I kept my thumb on my katana's guard and my right hand near the hilt, just in case. I might be almost demon, but Lucas was truly dangerous.
They don't call him the Deathless for nothing.
What do you want, chica?
Maybe I can pull this off.
Are you afraid of demons? I watched his face crinkle, scarred flesh pleating.
They die just like everything else.
I'm not even gonna ask you how you know that.
All right. How would you like to work for the devil, Lucas Villalobos? The Prince of Hell. He measured me for a long moment.
You're fucking serious?
I'm fucking serious. Pay's negotiable. The boss is a bitch, but you get to kill things the like of which you've never seen before. He thought about it. I hoped he was tempted, too.
Here I am, alive despite demons, for maybe a little while longer, tempting a man who can't die. I thought temptation was a demon trick. Maybe I've learned it from the best.
Pay's negotiable?
I stared into his eyes and nodded. Negotiable, Lucas. What do you want? The faint twitch at the corner of his eye warned me. I slapped his hand aside, locking his wrist. The knife buried itself into the table. I found myself sitting across from him, my slim, golden fingers locked in a vice around his hand on the knife. He hadn't meant to attack me, just see if I was on my toes. His other hand was loosely clasped around the bottle.
I've never seen anyone human move that fast. If I squeeze, I can probably break a bone or two in his hand, and my fingers will sink into plast steel if I extend my claws.
His pupils dilated, turning his almost yellow eyes a darker shade.
What's the job?
I could feel the tense, humming strength in his arm.
No, he is not human anymore. If he ever was. It's only rumor when it comes to him, Danny. Be careful.
Keep me alive long enough to kill 4 greater flight demons and be my eyes and ears. I quelled the urge to look behind me. The mark on my shoulder was soft heat now, wrapping around me, each pulse of power sliding through my veins and bones.
Distracting, but I can use the power. Is Jeffermil tracking me even now? Gods, I hope so.
You're never boring. Let's go out the back door.
What do you want in return, Lucas?
The usual. Or I'll think of something else.
Oh, gods. Gods above.
My skin seemed to chill. But here was an opportunity, and he was definitely the lesser of 2 evils. I was slightly nauseated at the thought of what I was about to agree to.
Slightly? More than slightly. But when it comes to a choice between nausea and dying in some hideous way, I'll take a little bit of indigestion.
Done. One thing. I paused, my hand still clasped around his, the knife in the tabletop. The town would soon be buzzing with the news that Villalobos had found a new client. What are you doing in New Prague?
Abracadabra.
He pulled a wad of crumpled new credits from his pocket with his free hand and tossed a few on the table.
I was in Saint City Way. She told me to go to New Prague and you'd find me. Bad news always turns up. I owed her a favor.
The Spider of Saint City wasn't quite a friend, but she wasn't an enemy either. We'd done each other some good turns in the past, and she had warned me about Santino and given me the direction to track him.
So she's used a favor to send Lucas to me, which means I owe her now.
Oddly enough, I found myself not minding, and unsurprised that Abra knew I'd turn up in New Prague. I wasn't quite sure what she was, but she wasn't human either, and she always seemed to know far more than she should, even with her thriving trade in information. But there might be more to this. I loosened my fingers, and he worked the knife free of the tabletop and made it vanish back into his clothing. I watched, but he didn't so much as twitch toward another weapon. What were you doing visiting Abra?
I drop in every 20 years or so. Nice to have a client that doesn't age.
He stood up, and I slid out of the booth as well. Now I could see he was only about 3 inches taller than me, instead of the 5-inch edge he used to have. and bandoliers still crisscrossed his narrow chest. He wore a blousy cotton shirt, yellow with age, and old broken-in jeans. The heels of his boots were worn down.
Let's go, Valentine. From now until the fourth demon's dead, I'm your new best friend.
Lucas was a viper, deadly and unpredictable. But if he said he was my man, it was a bargain. Villalobos didn't back down from his word. He still scared the hell out of me, but if you're facing down a clutch of demons, you could do worse than have the Deathless on your side. When you spend decades doing assassinations, it pays to have a bolt hole in a major city or two. I was just glad Villalobos had one here. I followed his slumped shoulders through twisting narrow streets in the old town, marking each turn in a magi-trained memory that has seen many cities. We ducked down an alley and into the sewers through the basement of a crumbling building that now housed a colony of slickboard couriers, neo-neo-punk music pounding through the air and the sharp smell of Czechy cooking filling my nose, sparking hunger. I already had a good basic grasp of the shadow side of the city after my six-bar odyssey. Now, Lucas took me underneath. Here, under the Staru Mesta, water dripped in chilly rivulets down stone, twisting its dark way from the rounded ceilings of the old sewers. Lucas pressed the scan lock on the round door. Claustrophobia filled my throat with acid and made my heart pound. I didn't say a word. I lose a lot of my sense of direction underground, but I was fairly sure I could make it to the surface and give anyone chasing me a good run, if I didn't expire of hyperventilation when the walls started to close in on me. I do not do well with closed spaces. Most scions don't. I have memories that don't help either. Memories of the Faraday cage and the sensory deprivation vault under Rigor Hall, where the darkness was like worms eating the foundations of my mind, and the air itself turned to solid glass, choking and slick.
Better claustrophobic than dead. I can live with an awful lot when demons are trying to kill me.
Beyond the door, mellow, full-spectrum light played over wood and tile.
Shit.
Lucas's lair in New Prague was in a long, vaulted chamber, well insulated from psychic or physical attack. If I knew Lucas, there would be a few little surprises hidden in the room, as well as quick ways to get out that didn't involve the front door. But for a moment, I simply stopped to admire as he closed the door behind us. I saw two beautifully restrained maplewood tables with the distinctive Deniantin curve to their legs, a restrained red old Parisiano rug, a silvery lamp, a near priceless Mobian print, a naked man sitting on a wooden table, his legs pulled up and head resting on his knees, a tattoo of a scorpion on his bicep, straining against the skin, hung on the wall over two low, graceful haverack chairs. Lucas paused behind me. It's beautiful. I like Mobian.
Valuable. Sit down. You hungry?
I'm starving.
I was lucky to be able to fuel myself with human food instead of sex or blood, but I hadn't had the chance to eat as much as I'd have liked. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen you eat, Lucas.
There's a kitchen through there. Help yourself. I'm going to go bounce through town and see if anyone's looking for you. Pick up a few things.
He moved behind me. My back prickled.
Lucas Villalobos is behind me. I can't see what he's doing.
I nodded, turning slowly to face him.
Don't be ridiculous, Danny. He isn't gonna stab me in the back. At least, I don't think he will. Instead, he's planning on doing what I would do if our situations were reversed. Checking to see if there's any static on the new client.
Is there another exit? In case the front door's compromised? He studied me for a long few moments, his almost yellow eyes empty of all expression.
Come over here.
Behind a painted Chonyo screen, he showed me a small depression in the tiles, just big enough for a hand. It triggered a slice of wall to swing inward, and if you were quick, you could drop down into another tunnel that would take you to the surface, push the door closed from the other side, and nobody would be the wiser.
But be careful. It's slippery.
Good enough. Thank you, Lucas.
Don't thank me, Valentine. I'm only taking this because I'm fucking curious.
About what?
I followed him out from behind the screen and almost to the door. I was suddenly cold, thinking of when he shut that door and I was alone.
Underground, in a windowless room. Oh, gods.
Maybe the devil can kill me. The gods know I've waited long enough.
The kitchen was where he said it was, and down a short hall was a bathroom and... oh, Anubis. A tiny, womb-like bedroom. I looked longingly at the plain missionary-style bed, exhaustion weighing me down. It was the first time in my life I'd faced Lucas Villalobos without feeling almost too terrified to talk.
I suppose that possibly losing your ex-demon, soon-to-be real-demon-again boyfriend and fighting off a three-balled imp behind a hover train, not to mention getting your house shattered and blown up, will make anyone a little too worn out to feel the proper fear when facing the man death had denied.
Besides, I was different now. Tougher than a human, capable of taking more damage.
For how much longer, though? If Jaframel is a citizen of hell again, am I going back to being a human? I wouldn't think a genetic remodel like mine could be undone, but demons have been tinkering with genetics for so long, I wouldn't put much past them.
Some people even say demons might have been responsible for humanity's evolution, but nobody likes to think about that particular theory. It leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Jaff changed me in the first place, after all. Reversing the change might not be so big a deal to him. It might even happen just because.
I rubbed at my temple with my right hand. This is getting ridiculous.
Ridiculous or not, you need to rest so you can think. So just settle down, sunshine. Relax. Wait for Lucas to come back.
My hunger was sharp, but Lucas's taste ran to heat-sealed meals. They taste like cardboard and sit in the stomach like bowling balls, not providing enough in the way of nutrition, especially for my metabolism. So I did the next best thing, dragged two blankets from the bed behind the chonyo screen. I propped myself up against the wall, my right hand loose around my sword hilt.
Ugh.
I closed my eyes, listening to the quiet. I rarely, if ever, heard complete silence, being a child of the urban age. Being underground meant the psychic noise of so many people was shut out. The only thing left was power itself, filtering in through the ground like water, and the peculiar, directionless static that meant you're underground.
Maybe I'll have to go to ground like an animal for the next 7 years.
The prospect was alternately comforting and horrifying, depending on whether my eyes were open or closed. I dozed in Lucas Villalobos's lair, feeling a little safer now. Time slid away as I tipped my head against the wall, the back of my neck curiously naked.
Some demon somewhere knows what Lucifer has bargained me into doing and is looking to get the first shot in. That's predictable. After all, I'm the weakest link in the chain leading to the devil. If they kill me messily enough, like a mob turf hit, it might be a statement to other demons looking to rebel. If Lucifer can't even keep one lousy human alive, his reputation will take a hit and hell might get even harder to control.
I felt cold at the thought of demons slipping out of hell and causing havoc in my world. Like it or not, Lucifer was relatively well disposed toward humanity, and I suspected it might be hard to contact demons, mostly because he wanted it that way. The thought of a change in that status quo was enough to give anyone nightmares. I thought of the temple, and Lucifer's eyes on me. He had neatly outmaneuvered me. I hadn't even managed to stick up for Eve's freedom. Eve, a little girl, her pale hair a shining sleek cap, her indigo eyes too wide and too calm with awful, chilling maturity. Doreen's daughter, birthed from Lucifer's genetic material and the marrow and blood Santino had murdered Doreen for. One of my biggest failures. One of a long string.
Why do I keep going from one subject I don't like to another?
Ugh. I shifted uncomfortably, rubbed my head against the chill tile wall. Since I was so much warmer than human now, it was nice to feel the coolness seeping into my skin.
Sometimes.
After a few hours of fruitless brooding, I opened my eyes. I was just about to shift so I could lie down on the floor when my demon-sharp ears heard the sound of stealthy movement out in the tunnel leading to Lucas's door. I hadn't even realized I was listening so intently, straining my ears for any whisper of motion. I froze, my left hand palm up, clasping my sword. My eyes dropped to the almost forgotten wrist cuff. Its etched lines were moving again, and even under the full spectrum lights, they glinted eerie, bright green.
I don't need a demon language dictionary to know that means nothing good for me.
I pushed up to my feet and started hunting on the wall for the small depression.
Gotta love the sewer system.
Night had fallen when I reached the end of a long, slick tunnel. The wrist cuff held up to provide me with a little light. I found myself coming out under another heavily patched concrete and plasteel bridge, with a thin trickle of water sliding from the bottom of the pipe I had been bent almost double traversing. I heard thunder rumble far away over New Prague, smelled incipient rain, heavy and wet and chemical-laden against my palate. A staircase led up to the street, and I picked my way up the crumbling narrow stone steps cautiously, scanning the street above. This part of New Prague looked bombed out and deserted, but several ruined buildings had thin columns of cooking smoke rising into the night air. I scanned in a circle with eyes and other senses, my attention moving over the buildings.
Nothing dangerous? No shimmer of bloodthirsty intent?
Now that I was above ground, I started to feel a little vulnerable.
Who could find Lucas's lair? He's a professional. He wouldn't have let anybody back down to me, would he? Certainly not willingly, unless he's a double agent. No, that's paranoid. Maybe a demon could follow Lucas without his knowing? Either way, this bracelet warned me of the imp on the hover train. I'm not foolish enough to disregard it now. God, what if Lucas is really working for someone who wants me dead?
Damn it, if that was it, he would have leapt on me when my back was turned. I'm starting to get paranoid.
Starting? I'm a full-blown flower of paranoia. A fucking garden full.
My nape tingled. Instinct took over. I ducked back down the stairs, my body moving with preternatural speed, and slid under the cover of the bridge. A sleek black hover swept into sight from around the shattered hulk of what looked like an apartment building. Light stabbed down from its underside. I sensed the bristle of relays on the bottom, like spines on a poisonous fish. I bit my lip as I watched, drawing back in the shadows and hoping they didn't have infrared.
I'll show up like a Pushkin Yule tree with my demon's metabolism radiating heat against this cool night air.
The hover swept the area again in a standard quartering pattern. I was tempted to scan it, but if I tried that, any scion aboard would feel my attention and tell I was close. Despite the interference from the deep well of New Prague's ambient power and the fact that I was pressing myself into stone and willing it to hide me, they still might be able to tell my general location. It was good to have a share of a demon's power, but it was not the most circumspect way to get around.
Let's face it, Dante. Who knows how long it will last?
Oh, shut up. When the hover drifted out of sight, I waited, then went slowly up the stairs again and looked around.
Underground. I have to either find a way to get underground again, or find a way to contact Lucas.
What the hell am I thinking? I've got a big target painted on my back. If I stay alive long enough, Lucas will find me. God knows there's only a limited number of places I can hide. I closed my eyes for a moment, willing myself to think, and opened them to find another faint green glow coming from the wrist cuff. What's the one thing they would never expect?
You must decide to fight or flee.
When attacked, sometimes an enemy's force can be turned back upon itself, and I'm rapidly running out of options. I need to know exactly how the battlefield is arranged against me.
I planted my feet, my left hand curled around the scabbard, centered myself, and threw up a very huge, very loud burst of power. I didn't expect it to flame into the visible spectrum. It did. A sparkling, crackling bolt of blue-green lanced up from my outflung right hand and arrowed for the clouds above. It would disperse over the city, but not before it was remarked.
If Lucas is near, he'll come find out what the fuss is.
With that done, I ran for the abandoned apartment building. No smoke drifted from its broken windows, and it stood in the middle of a tumbled wilderness of concrete blocks next to an impressive crater hosting a few twisted scrub trees that had managed to grow amid the wreck.
A good defensible position. If I have to retreat from it, I'll have plenty of cover. Of course, anyone sneaking up on the building will have plenty of cover, too. Hey, life can't be perfect. I'll settle for just living through the night, really.
The sleek black hover came back. Just as I shinnied through a space between two boards nailed to the broken windows, the hem of Jace's coat tore a little on ancient broken glass. Real silica glass instead of plasglass. I bolted toward the side of the building that would give me a view of the hover. Trash littered the bottom floor of the building, and a gigantic hole had been blasted through several floors. I could glimpse the sky as I gathered myself to leap. Claws sinking solidly into crumbling concrete, every nerve alive. Twist and throw the body upward again, landing cat-soft in my boots. Then I ducked and ran, blurring through the debris littering the third floor. I finally reached the side where I could see the hover and peered out through a broken window, sheltering myself behind a crumbling wall. The hover yawed, strings tangling down from its underbelly.
Have people bailed out on jump cords? I've missed something.
The sleek black shape slid to the side as if something was terribly wrong, but there was no hint of what. I looked below and saw dark humanoid shapes flitting through the broken cover. Some moved like humans.
Others don't. They have to have been in the neighborhood or came down the jump cords from that hover. Did they see me coming in here?
The hover healed alarmingly again, and a puff of bright green light showed from inside its tinted windows, quickly seen and just as quickly snuffed.
What the hell is going on here?
I decided a bit more altitude would be a good thing and retreated to the hole blown in the building, trying not to feel like I'd trapped myself. At least now I knew they were after me, and I was fairly sure I could fight my way out if I had enough cover to hide behind while I got close enough to conduct a little guerrilla action. A few more leaps and I was on the sixth floor, levering myself in and rolling away. I made it to the window just in time to see the hover grounding itself, throwing up chunks of dirt and stone, its plasteel sides ripped open as it smashed into the bridge I'd hidden under. The ground shook, the building swaying under my feet.
If I had a slipboard, I could be out of here in a hurry.
Instead, I skirted the gaping hole on owl-soft feet, fleeing for the more broken-down area of the building. It was dangerous since I was denser and heavier than a human, but I could also handle a higher fall.
Okay, so a hover's been down, but not with a blast bolt. A reaction fire would have brought this whole damn building down and burned a scar into the city to boot.
It had been downed quietly, all things considered, which probably meant some kind of EMP pulse, probably fairly unremarked since we were out of the main hover lanes.
That means, possibly, two groups of enemies tangling with each other.
Good for me.
Fight or flee?
I found a blind corner and waited.
I'll be able to see anything that moves on this floor, and I'll be able to shoot anything that comes up through the hole.
It looked as if this place had been bombed, maybe even in the aftermath of the 70 Days War, or a local brush fire action. If I had to, I could drop out of the building and tear my way through a search ring or two. Make enough time to lose myself in New Prague. I'd have the benefit of knowing who was after me and what resources they could scramble on short notice. The air pressure suddenly changed. Heaviness sliding against my skin. The cuff tightened, squeezing. I folded up inside myself, trying to stay as small and still as possible. The air turned hard and hot, and my throat stopped as I held my breath unconsciously. Below, I felt the arrival of something with an aura full of twisting diamond flame. The smell of heavy oranges and bloody musk filled the air.
Another demon?
The black, twisting diamond flames of demon power warped through the building's physical space. I gauged the distance between me and the window. There was no way I could take on a demon, but if it managed to trap me, I would have to see what I could come up with.
Right hand!
The words made the building quiver like a plucked string.
Kinslayer! I wish to speak to you. Come and face me.
The chilling voice echoed up from below.
What the hell? Speaking American.
I stayed where I was.
I know you are here. I can smell you.
Good for you. I'd give you a prize, but I don't think you'd like it.
My right hand tensed around my sword hilt.
If a demon comes for me, I want it to be on my terms. Now I know there's at least one demon in New Prague and that he's most likely looking for me. And that he can smell me. And that he's mistaking me for Jaff.
I gathered myself, centimeter by centimeter, like a coiled spring. Jaframel had taught me how to do it. Conserve my body's need for motion, then explode into demon-swift action.
Don't think about him. Think about getting out of here. Quickly. Now that you know what you're facing, get the fuck out of here. If it was easy for me to haul my carcass up here, it'll be even easier for a demon. Especially one of the greater flight.
Stillness. A killing silence like radiation burn.
There's a demon down there. And what else? What else is waiting to make my life miserable?
The cuff tightened on my wrist again. Its glow had dampened, as if it didn't want to give away my location. I went so still I could imagine my molecules slowing down their frenetic dance. I could imagine the flashes between my nerves slowing down, too.
I can imagine too goddamn much, as a matter of fact.
Show yourself! I come to speak of—
And then, the unthinkable happened.
Shit, someone else! Another arrival, just like a damn transport dock. Gods above, this just keeps getting better!
I tore my sword out of its sheath, blue flame exploding along the blade. This rather rapidly altered the entire situation.
One demon who doesn't know where I am, I can handle. Two demons in a melee, I most definitely cannot handle. But it should give me enough cover to get the fuck out of here.
I bolted for the window and hit it with power and flesh both. Wood exploded out, the momentum carrying me far. I braced for impact, tumbling through the air. Class gun fire streaked past, and projectile weapons. I slammed down, my boots cracking concrete, the shock jolting all the way up to the crown of my head. I charged the first two opponents. Mercenaries, human, each with guns and blades. I didn't even kill the second one, just knocked him aside. I streaked over smoking rubble. Plasgun bolts crisscrossed my path. A line of fire brushed my cheek like a whip. They were firing at me because I was moving too fast to engage now. I burst out into a street, deserted but lit with streetlights, flashes of buildings as I ran using demon speed. I heard the footsteps behind me.
They're swifter than you. You have to do something quick. They're gaining on you, gaining on you. God damn it, it's time to think of something else, Danny.
I saw an intersection ahead of me and could have jagged to try to throw off pursuit, but my body decided otherwise, streaking instead for the shelter of an alley. I burst into stinking darkness. No power left to make a shield to ward off the smells of human death and decay. I leapt over a dumpster, shoving it back in the same motion. The end of the alley was what I'd hoped for, a blank brick wall. And I twisted in midair, boots thudding against it, and completed the motion by leaping lightly down, facing back the way I'd come, ready now.
If I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die in combat, face on, with my back to the wall.
Adrenaline soared and rang through me, pushing me past rational thought and into the tearing claw frenzy of an animal brought to bay and prepared to go down fighting. He stood less than 10 feet away, the darkness burning around him. My heart slammed into my throat. I dropped into guard, my blade glowing with harsh, hurtful blue light. The mark flared against my shoulder, soft velvet heat scoring into my nervous system.
His eyes. Anubis at their ka, his eyes.
His eyes were like Lucifer's, piercing, intense green. And his aura, the diamond-twisting black flames of a demon. He was the same as he had been the very first time I'd ever seen him on my front step.
Tierce Jaframel is a demon again.
The look on his face froze my blood. My heart smashed against my ribs. My sword blazed blue-white. Every nerve in my body sang with the furious urge to kill. I dug my heels into the concrete and prepared to sell myself dear if he came for me. Jaframel cocked his head, watching me. His face was shuttered, blank. Only the terrible burning fire of his eyes to show he was something more than a statue. I knew how eerily fast he could move. My heart threw itself against my ribs as if it intended to explode and save everyone involved the trouble of killing me. We stood like that, Fallen No More and Hedera, for about 30 of the longest seconds of my life. My blade, the weapon of a necromance, spat blue flame. My head was full of the rushing noise of combat. I was set on Lay's trigger, dialed up to 11, and just aching. Aching to fight.
If you're gonna do it, do it. Don't make me wait for it.
What nonsense are you speaking now?
Huh. Oh.
He sounds like he always has.
My sword blade dipped slightly. Then relief turned to whipsawing fear and irritation, riding just under my skin.
I haven't eaten and I've just expended a hell of a lot of power.
The mark on my shoulder pulsed. Another hot wave of power soaking into the mass of exposed nerves I was fast becoming.
Dante?
He didn't move. His eyes flicked down my body, took in my feet in ready stance, the blue glowing blade came back up to my face. What happens now? My sword blade dipped even further, blue flame glowing, my rings flaring with golden sparks. What now, Tears Jaframel? Comprehension lit his face. In that one moment, he looked completely human, despite the lasers of his eyes. My chest gave a horrible squeeze. His eyebrows drew together again, and I braced myself for it.
This is gonna hurt. This is gonna hurt worse than Jace, worse than Doreen, worse than anything. Oh, gods, I've been wrong. He is planning on making me human again. He's gonna tell me. How is he gonna tell me? Jaframel, please.
If you think I'm about to fight you, Dante, you are exceedingly stupid.
Is that disdain in his voice? Or is it anger? Irritation? Damn, I wish I could tell.
Oh, I braced myself. Are you sure? He made a curious little grimace. He clasped his hands behind his back, his inky hair falling over his forehead, longer than it had been the first time I saw him. His shoulders relaxed infinitesimally.
Someday, Dante, I will discover how your mind works. When I do, I will be able to live content having solved one of the great mysteries of creation.
What?
What? My shoulders relaxed.
It's going to be all right. He's here.
But the red bath of instinct under my skin wasn't so sure. The animal in me wanted to fight, wanted hot blood and a death scream. And I was so twitched out on adrenaline and fear, I wasn't sure I could stop myself.
Have you lost your senses?
That's definitely anger.
When had he learned to wear such a human face? The expressions flitting over his expressive mouth, plain as day to me.
I told you I would come for you.
Well, there's a lot that expression can mean. You told me to stay inside the house. They cracked the shields. If I hadn't gotten out of there, the reaction fire... And the imp, there was an imp, and back there...
Ah, I see.
He nodded. Slowly, so slowly, the tension and bloodlust faded, my pulse slowing down, and he made no move. I was still on the fine edge, pushed almost past rationality by the crazed burst of relief and fresh fear. I had just escaped a demon, and now here was another one in front of me, and even though I knew him, I still felt pretty damn nervous. Each moment he just stood there scraped my nerves raw.
My nerves are jagged enough.
Don't just stand there!
He didn't even move. Just examined me, his hands behind his back and his shoulders straight.
God damn it!
Hush. You must come with me now. It isn't safe here for you.
You're telling me.